So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé MK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing Season 8, Episode 10 of Happily Ever After. In this episode, Kobe's family explains the bride price to Emily's family, Alexi tries to manage being outnumbered by toddlers, Liz takes Riley back from Arkansas, Jasmine explains the baby situation to Gino, another fun activity for Sophie and Rob turns into a fight, Mahmoud leaves Nicole again, and Angela returns, this time blowing up over Michael's visa application. We'll be back again next week to talk about episode 11. And we're also back on our other channel, Love After Lockup MK, covering the current season of Love During Lockup. Alright, thanks for listening, stay safe, and enjoy!
Hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. We're getting towards the end of the school year.
Yeah.
Next week we'll be recording like live and in person, so that's always exciting.
Yeah, together. So that'll be interesting. But until then, we're just trying to survive the school year. And so, you know, end of the year, lots of activities, which is the reason why we're a day later than we're usually releasing this. So let's just go ahead and jump right in. So let's start off with Emily and Kobe. So Kobe's family is talking about how important the knock door ceremony is. The list for the dowry is presented and, you know, it's a list of all the things that they want. The family says that a list needs to happen because it's part of tradition and their religion. Kobe just hopes that Emily's mom plays along and respects the tradition, even though she feels a way about it. Emily's dad shows her the giant container of palm wine that they've been, I don't know, cooking up themselves. I wasn't really sure where this palm wine came from. Emily has also been cooking traditional Cameroonian dishes. David, Emily's dad, assures Emily that everything will be fine. Emily just hopes that Kobe's parents won't be offended with her mom, Lisa, presenting her concerns. Kobe arrives with his family. Emily isn't supposed to be there for the ceremony, so she hangs back in the house with the kids. Kobe isn't supposed to be the one talking, but he is because he's translating the meaning of what his family is doing and saying and explains what's happening. They bring in Emily and their daughter, Scarlett, and she's just running around. Lisa wants an explanation of the bride price. His cousin explains that Emily is property and she will be buried in Cameroon. David and Lisa both say they have an issue with the word property. And so then that's kind of where we left off. So, okay, I had a couple things. Like, the fact that the family insisted that this was part of their religion, like, is this, like, written in, I don't know, do they follow the Bible? Is this a biblical thing or other?
I couldn't say that for enough. I don't know enough about, like, some of the esoteric things of the Bible. I believe that they're Christian. I'm not even 100% sure about that. Because he did say that there was, you know, an English part and a French part and, like, things like that. And so I tend to assume that places that were colonized like that were Christian and, you know, possibly Islam. But as far as I know about Cameroon, it's mostly Christian. But maybe I'm wrong on that. But I feel like – and I also say that because I feel like if Kobe was a Muslim, I feel like we would have heard of that before, right? It would have been an ongoing thing, almost like it is with every other Muslim person we've met.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little, like, kind of unsure about that. And I also feel that saying something is part of your religion is kind of like the, you know, what do they call those things where it's like, that's the end of the argument. You can't argue with that.
Right.
Yeah. If you say, oh, that's like tradition, like tradition is one of those things where it's just always been done that way. Mm-hmm. But there isn't some kind of like unwritten law or something saying you have to do it that way, not like in religion. So I feel that they were just saying it was a religious tradition because they didn't want someone to go against it and have to defend it.
Right. And have to actually justify like what's the thought process behind this? Because when the cousin was there and was explaining it, I feel like he explained it in the literal worst possible way he could have to make it like sound as bad as possible. And they were I don't understand this about like property. He's like, well, you know how like she doesn't belong to you anymore and she's ours and you have no rights to her. And, you know,
bury her here. Like, that's a pleasant thing, right? Like, now she gets to be buried amongst her ancestors.
If she dies, she won't be with you at all. She's not even really part of your family anymore. Like,
right.
Like, and they're like, so kind of like she's being sold. And he's like, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what it's like.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, though, the cousin has any idea of why that's an issue, right? And I'm sure that's going to come up and... You know, I thought it was a very awkward spot to kind of end their segment.
Yeah, it was.
Really have any kind of resolution. It was just like, we don't like, you know, using property. Okay.
Right. And it was just that the weird explanation that went with it came to, because that was like, because first of all, it was like, oh, Lisa, she being insensitive. And then by the end, Dad was on board too. He was like, yeah. You know, I really don't like that word being used because that's, you almost throw it back in it, throw it back at them if they're going to say religion. Because you could easily say as an American Christian, which I believe they are, that my religion teaches me that no people are property. So where are we going with that? That is not a thing that exists. I'm not going to agree to make my daughter property. That goes against my religion, right?
Yeah. And David Dad has been pretty like on board and like very like accommodating with this whole process. So
right. And if you would have said like something like, oh, well, you know, they're the family and they're married to each other and it's a token of appreciation is what the bride price is. And then it would have been like, they could have gotten away with that. It could have been like, oh, okay, I see what it means. Oh, you're appreciating that the family raised the wonderful daughter of it that you now get to celebrate. But he was very much like, no, that's not it at all. We're buying her. Like, that's just property now.
it's not a good look.
Yeah, I feel like we could have came up with something like that made it a little bit better.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Alexi and Lauren. They also had actually a decent amount of time, but not a whole lot happening. Alex is teasing Lauren, calling her grandma because she's moving very slowly. They return to the doctor the next day where Lauren is hunched over and slowly walking with her wheelchair as a walker. Even though she still looks like a grandma, Lauren is in love with the muumuu Alex picked out for her. Lauren praises Alex's care. Alex says that you can't really tell the difference because she's so swollen, but he does notice that the second chin is gone, so he says that she's already starting to look snatched. Lauren admits that it's been difficult. The plan was for her mom to take over as caretaker, but Alex thinks he needs to be the one taking care of Lauren since the care doesn't seem as straightforward as they all thought it was going to be. Lauren really wants Alex to go back to the kids, though. Alex says Lauren needs him more than the kids, and she's not realizing how much goes into taking care of her. He thinks that Lauren is feeling guilty about taking herself out of childcare for 6 to 8 weeks, but he just wants to do what's best for everyone. Alex has gone home because he needs to help his dad with the kids since Lauren's mom couldn't help. Alex is trying to get the house in order as he's literally dragging the children around. He's doing dishes and loading the dishwasher, and then he's trying to wash the clothes, which needs a nap. He gives up because he can't seem to figure out the washing machine. He video calls Lauren to ask how to do the laundry. He admits that he has never done laundry on this machine before. He seems to figure things out as Shai falls off the chair and hurts his side. This prompts Alex to call Lauren with the children. One of the kids grabs a plastic sword and is waving it around, which stresses Alex out. He says that the kids are going nuts. He's been home for a couple of hours and he thinks that things are spiraling out of control and he can't imagine doing this for 5 weeks when he has to go back to work in a couple of days. So you are a father who has two children that are very close in age, kind of like what they have, except for they have one more than
you. The third, it gets exponentially harder. Yeah, it really does. It's like It doesn't get like 50% harder when you add the third one. It gets way harder. Like the more kids you add,
exponentially worse.
Yes.
Yeah. So, how upset would you have been if she was your wife at the time when they were this young, would just like out of commission for 5 to 6 weeks?
I mean,
I know both your families are kind of near-ish by, so they probably would have helped out the same amount as what Alex is getting help, but
right. I mean, it just. Yes, it would have been Right. This is, yeah. I kind of am on it. The mommy makeover, can't the mommy makeover wait until they're in school?
Mm-hmm. Like,
right? Until we have something going on. Now, he says that. What I think what's a little kind of silly about this is he's like 5 weeks of this. He's like, and then I'm going to go back to work. And how am I going to do this too? And it's like, well, are you going to be – somebody else is going to be watching when you're at work. Unless he's worked from home. Is he worked from home?
I don't know.
And he has to take care of the kids and work at the same time. That's not tenable at all. Like for anybody and even under normal circumstances.
They're not very like open about what he does for work.
Sure.
I feel like he had some kind of manual labor job at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
through the but years.
Especially if in this situation too, because in this situation, Lauren is a stay-at-home mom, right?
Yeah.
So they're saying, I mean, she, by doing being a stay-at-home mom, is saying that caring for this house and taking care of these three children is itself a full-time job. And I'm not going to disagree with that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But then she's just – now you're putting two jobs in one person's hand, right? Because she's admitting that you must do my full-time job.
Right.
At the same time you do your full-time job, right? So I feel like that's kind of a person in the least tenable position to be holding this. Like, yes, this is something that is hard enough to be a full-time job. Do it in addition to your regular job now, all by yourself. Go.
Yeah. I agree what you were saying about having this done when the kids are all at an age where it's less of a stress, right? Because he was right. These kids were going nuts. But I mean, they were just being kids. I didn't think they were being especially bad
Not. Absolutely not. They were just being kids. Yeah, they weren't like being terrors and I think but kids falling off of stools, kids needing more snacks. That's just kids. That's just kids
waving things around like weapons. But this one actually was kind of a weapon.
Yes, kids just randomly doing things. I have one of my nephews is a bit of a handful just because he's the kind of kid that if you do that and you're like, oh my God, put that down. That's dangerous. He just like looks at you and laughs and goes and
then
keeps doing it. Like he's like he just like, oh, I'm in trouble now, aren't I? This is hilarious. Let me go with that. Right.
Oh,
and so
goodness.
If you're one of those kids, it's a handful. Like there's I mean, it's always a cliche among parents that like, you know, you have to change defenses as you get more kids. Or if you can double team them when there's one kid and then there's two kids and you can go man to man. And then there's three kids and you got to just do a zone and hope you can cover everything. And that's really what's going on, right? It's just so much to cover and so much to have. And there's dishes. And then, oh my God, that last part, I feel it in my bones when he was like, he shuts the dishwasher, starts it up, it locks. And the kid's like, I found another cup. And you're like, oh my God. And at least that kid's like three.
Yeah.
Because that's going to keep happening until they're 18 and move out. Until like I could tell you, it keeps happening when they're 15.
Oh,
it's
gosh.
Like run the dishwasher and then like 3 seconds later, oh, yeah, these were in my room. Like what? Why? Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness. I felt bad for him with the washing machine, too, because it drives me nuts how everything is connected to an app these days.
Oh, my God. It's so funny.
Like,
why
is that a thing? Why do you need an app when the button on the front of the washing machine or appliance is perfectly functioning and good enough? I don't understand.
Oh, no. I definitely agree. I don't want my things to be connected to the internet.
I don't.
Anything that's connected to the internet can be hacked. And I don't need people trying to hack my fridge and hack my oven and my stove and my washing machine because the benefit I get from that, is that true about my phone? Sure. But the benefit I get from the phone is primarily because it's connected to the internet. Its connection to the internet is what I have it for. My refrigerator? No. I've never been like, because I know you can and do that. I've never been like sitting at work being like, I wonder if those tomatoes are still good. Let me zoom into my refrigerator and see like what they look like. I don't need to do that. No, I don't need to know when my oven is preheated. Like before I get home, it's all like not necessary.
Yeah. And no, I absolutely agree with you. I feel the exact same way. And it makes me feel a Luddite, especially considering what we teach. But I'm like, I don't need everything connected to a virtual assistant either. You know, I don't need everything connected to Alexa.
I feel the same way about AI right now. Right?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, everything's going to be AI. And I was like, it shouldn't be because AI sucks right now.
Right.
Like, it is not good enough right now to do what they're trying to do. Like,
no, but, and you know, and that's the thing too. And I hate to say this because I know it'll insult people, but it's like, I think it fools people who don't really know about it. It really does a good job of tricking in people into thinking it's a lot smarter than it is. And then you try get it to do anything like reasonable, and you're like, that is the most unreasonable response.
Yes. Well, because you know who else is good at getting people to believe things and believe they're smarter than they are just blowhards who make stuff up, but they make it stuff up confidently. And that's exactly what AI is right now.
It is. Like, I agree.
It said that thing. It said that completely bonkers, off the wall, incorrect thing very authoritatively. So that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the second you push back, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It's like, no, I shouldn't be right. I shouldn't be outsmarting you. Stop it.
Yes. Especially if you're going to be basing like actual actionable things on it. If it's ChatGPT and you're playing with it, or you're writing a stupid thing, who cares, right? But like if you're going to be like, oh, no, we're going to base all your – even the small things like Google is replacing the search with an AI. Like that's not – it's not good enough for that. Like
it's so terrible. Like I was trying to do research for like a poster project I was doing, and it made up people. But we could go on and on about this, I feel like, because there's like, a whole like phantom thing. Yeah. Okay. Anyways – I think that's all we want to say about them and their use of technology. So we can move on.
So let's talk Ed and Liz. So everybody's packing up. Well, I say everyone. It's basically Liz and Riley because they're going back to San Diego. So Riley now has been made aware that the wedding's off and Ed and Liz are broken up and Ed's not going to be in her life anymore. So it's really just too weird and awkward right now for Liz and Riley to live in the same house as Ed. And he's just kind of around and they're broken up. So she's going to go back to San Diego, not necessarily permanently, but just with enough time to get somewhere comfortable and come up with a plan. So she wants to leave the house eventually, obviously, but she's not sure if her future life is going to be in California or in Arkansas. Because if you remember, they were working on their real estate license. And that's kind of something, once you start it in one state, you're kind of locked into that state. And so she's locked into Arkansas for that if she wants to continue that. So they come out and Edgewood's in the kitchen this whole time and he asks for a minute with Riley before they walk out. So Liz, not really enthused about this plan, but she gives in and he talks to Riley one-on-one and apologizes for not being able to see her anymore. And they, not be able to play games and have fun or whatever. And they say, I love you to each other. So he hopes his breakup doesn't negatively impact Riley too much. So then Liz is hurt and crying and upset, as she's walking out. And it's like upsetting her more that Ed doesn't seem that upset, right? Mm. And so she's just like, I don't understand. How am I the one that cares and he doesn't care? Then she's also kind of dreading going back and, seems like a failure to go back and get all the I told you so's when she gets back to San Diego. But then they're back on their driveway and they drive off. And after that, Ed just starts trying to clean up the house. He just sad washes some dishes and it reminds him that, he's going to have to put his whole life back together in his late 50s. And maybe he should start by hiring a cleaning lady to do all these dishes for him. Because you could see him just try to clean stuff. And he's like, But he doesn't think of his whole relationship, this end of his relationship, as a failure. He thinks they both dodged a bullet here. So, I mean, did they both dodge a bullet? Or was it just Liz that got bullet dodged?
Just Liz. I mean... I don't know. It's interesting, though, because when you heard his side of the story about her screaming at him over the taco pasta gate, it was weird because I was like, I can certainly imagine her yelling at him or being mad at him and stuff. But to be uncontrollably red in the face, screaming like he kind of painted that picture.
Well, and also just, for an extended period of time. I just imagine.
Right, just like, ranting, yes. Right? The way that he kind of made it seem. I just don't see that. And I just don't. And it is far more likely in my mind that Ed is lying about that because, my goodness, what hasn't he lied about?
Right. Oh yeah. I'm positive that I would bet my money on Ed did something extremely dickish, said something extremely dickish, and then wouldn't back down from it.
Yeah.
And that's what the yelling was about, right? And then at the end of the day, the next day, he's like, well, if she's going to get that upset about taco pasta, where really it was, if she can't deal with me being that big of an asshole, then things aren't going to work because I'm going to continue to be this big of an asshole.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really... My only thing that I've ever faulted Liz for, where I was like, is her judgment in picking Ed as a partner.
Just
that is the only thing. Everything else, she seems mostly reasonable. I don't think she's any more or less mature than her age, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's kind of like, well, if anything, Ed is more immature than she is. But, you know, I just, sure, she's made mistakes. And kind of thinking that there's nothing wrong with this back and forth type relationship. But if it was with Ed and she had this, or if it wasn't with Ed and she was still having this back and forth relationship, I would just chalk that up to, well, she's still kind of young and she's still got to figure out that whole relationship push and pull, like, isn't healthy and it never ends well. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just, I don't think that she is the bad part of this equation. You know, it's 100% him. She dodged a bullet with him. He is probably my least favorite, least bottom three of anyone in this entire series.
I mean, I think it's a tight competition with somebody else who showed up in this episode. Yeah. Definitely was, I would probably put that person as my least. He's on, I would say definitely bottom three.
Yeah.
For sure, for Ed. But,
yeah.
But, other person coming up later in the episode, worse for me.
All right. So I guess you're hinting at the return of Angela and Michael, one of our other favorite, not so favorite people. So Angela and Michael, they're eating dinner together in Nigeria, and Angela is trying to hype up Michael because he has his visa interview the next day. Angela says that she can't handle more rejection. Michael has applied for a student visa and a fiancé visa, and both were denied. His spousal visa was transferred to another country since there was such a backlog of applicants in Nigeria. Angela has pulled up some questions to prepare for his interview, and the first question is, how big is his penis? They both laugh at this question because it's not real. We next get more inappropriate info as we find out that the first time they visited, they had sex 36 times. And they always do this with them, right? Angela always offers up like these super inappropriate pieces of information.
Yes. Details. Hard to believe and super inappropriate. Yes.
Yes. Right. So they got married in 2020 and it's been 4 years since they applied for the spousal visa. We also get a recap of Michael's cheating. Angela says she never trusted Michael, but also never thought he would cheat. Those things don't go together.
Those mean the opposite.
Right.
Each other. Yes.
So Michael thinks that couples therapy really saved their marriage because if you remember, they were on Last Resort. Angela asks Michael to explain the age difference, and Michael says it's love, and he knows he loves her because she's shown him what true love is. But then he messes up the next question, saying that Angela is Italian Christian? Angela is convinced if she was in the interview with him that things would be approved pretty quickly, you know, because she would tell them what's up. Michael thinks there is enough proof out there to show that they are a legitimate couple. Angela can't imagine having to start over and do another 7 years of this. Angela tells him that if he's denied, that she's going to end things. They video call Angela's grandkids, and London, one of her grandbabies, says that Michael needs to get there. Angela wants to bring Papa Michael home for the grandkids. Michael says the first thing he wants to do is see the grandbabies. Angela says they're like kids, and she has like six of them. Skyla, her daughter, says that if it's God's will, she'll welcome Michael. We get a title card of screenshots that Michael printed out for his interview. Angela is mad because it makes their relationship look unstable. Angela doesn't understand why Michael would highlight their fighting over the cheating, which is what the screenshots were of. The producers ask what the deal is, and he said that he was trying to document that they are a real couple. That meant including documenting the fighting. Mm-hmm. Angela yells at him, saying that the conversation will get him denied. She refuses to go with him to the interview because she's just so mad. Michael says that she was triggered and nervous, and he just is trying to focus on the interview, and he will smooth things over with Angie when he gets back. Angela believes that he's been flagged with his other two rejections, so she can't understand why he would put something risky in this portfolio. Angela has regrets about not going with him because she thinks it makes her look unsupportive, and she wishes that she had had more time to cool off so she could go. She admits that she was self-centered and she should have just gone to the interview with him. She's annoyed that he doesn't see it as their visa. Okay, so what do you think of Michael's screenshots, including those as part of his evidence? Do you think it would strengthen his case that they're a legitimate couple? Or are you Team Angela and thinking, what are you thinking, you moron? This is going to get us rejected.
I mean, I definitely, this is probably not the best thing to choose, but I also don't trust Angela because Angela told him exactly what to put in a bunch of different blanks and he keeps getting rejected.
Right.
So like, I think Angela's idea, like if I was there, I would be able to explain everything, right? Like her entire idea of what should go in the visa application is wrong. It keeps getting rejected.
Yeah.
Right. And it keeps getting rejected because it seems fake. Right. And so I get where he's coming from. I'm not saying you can include the stuff where here's the part where she thought I was cheating on her. And here's the part where I said I was cheating on her. That's not good. Yeah. But the parts where you like show that you actually have real conversations and it's not just all clearly dumb. Like I could imagine nothing would get you rejected quite as fast as exactly what Angela is picturing in her head of like, they ask a question and he starts to talk. She's like, shut up. Let me handle this. I'm going to tell you. And like her speaking for him the entire time. Right.
Yeah.
As the American, let me just speak on this. And that's just going to make it look like that makes it look way more fake than whatever it is he's trying to do.
Right. I mean, okay. In my opinion, are they a real couple? Begrudgingly, I would have to say yes. They're a quote real couple.
Right.
But are they a couple that is stable enough that them getting granted the visa is going to result in his long-term relationship with Angela and residency of being in the U.S.? No. I mean, you can see how tumultuous their relationship is. And it's like, if anybody sees them or knows them from the show, they would know that, okay, whatever, give them the benefit of the doubt. This is a real couple. Right. But are they going to be divorced once they're in the presence of one another? Yes.
And I don't know. Is that something that they're judging on? Is
I
that
don't
something
know.
That like when they're deciding on a visa, is the likelihood that you guys are getting divorced, even if you are truly a real couple? Like, I don't think the State Department's getting involved in this relationship is doomed. Let's cancel this visa. Right. Like, you know.
Right. Now, I think you're right. And I do think it's not up to them to decide if this is going to be a long-lasting couple, right? But I also think that's why things have played out the way they've played out, right? Michael, in real life, we know that he has come to America. We know that Angela and Michael, within months of him being here, has fled, you know, abandoned Angela because of her abuse and like whatever their instability, alleged abuse, I will say, alleged abuse and instability in their relationship. And they are not together. In fact, he's hiding out to avoid seeing her.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and that is kind of evident. I mean, you already see you've seen that. We've seen it already. And we've seen what it goes on here. She just flies off the handle.
Yeah.
She doesn't say, hey, honey, like maybe there's some other text messages you might want to pick out that maybe don't highlight that we have disagreements and we're a real couple. I can see that, right? It makes you look more like a real couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's not just all everything sunshine and rainbows and we're just, I see love in each other's eyes, but maybe one that doesn't suggest that we're like in an open relationship, which is not legal. Like,
right.
You know, that because you're definitely getting rejected if you provide evidence that this is an open relationship. I'm actually polygamist. Like, that's not right.
Oh my gosh. I sometimes really, really wish that some of these immigration people, like whoever's the one making the decisions, I just wish they would see these shows, because I'm thinking of Seeking Sister Wives, where the guy like got divorced from his wife. I'm talking about the Mary Fields, if you watch that show. And he gets divorced from his wife. So that way he can try to do a K-1 visa with someone from Brazil. His wife gets knocked up, you know, the one that he's like supposedly divorced from. And it's like, shouldn't that be a red flag to the people in immigration that are making this decision on whether or not this is a legitimate relationship? And yes, it's a legitimate relationship, but it's also a polygamous relationship, and that's not legal.
Right. Yeah, it is wild. I do kind of wonder if they have any access to these shows.
Yeah.
And if they did, like, would you want them to see them?
No,
like,
I don't think so.
Like, Angela and Michael, in this case, you see that they are actually married and have been through some things and are sticking together. But, like, it's also weird things like, do they ask things like, when did you decide you loved your wife? That's a weird question. I don't know how to answer that question.
Right.
That's a weird question to ask.
Yeah.
Like, you want a big romantic story from the people? That just seems kind of weird. And I almost feel like it's one of those trick question things where, like, if you have a weird, completely good rehearsed pet story for a question they ask, you'd be like, I feel like you rehearsed that and made that up. Like, I don't know, that doesn't feel real to me. So I kind of get where he's coming from in that, like, I don't want to over prepare and go in there crazy. But whatever they've done before, I feel like they need to have debriefed from what happened before.
Right.
Like, what did you try before? Because that didn't work.
Yeah.
You need to try something different. And you're right, when they do try something different this time, this is try three. And the State Department knows that. Like, the people they're interviewing at immigration knows that this is his third crack at this.
Yeah, I don't know why he's so desperate to get to the U.S. I don't know what his living situation is like in Nigeria, but it's like, I don't understand how this person is so desperate that he's like, oh, possibly abusive partner? Yes, let's go with that.
Yes, I mean, it is. And he has been from the beginning. He's even in all this, it's been like he's in this for the green card.
Yeah.
And also, like, he is very much a sunk cost person.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I mean,
it's been after 7 years.
This for 7 years, yeah. Like, it's going to start to have to start over 7 years again. Like, so here we go. Like, yeah. So it's just a lot. And just seeing her on the screen again was instantly like, just like, oh God, please. Like, especially, I don't know if you paid attention to the outfit she was wearing.
No.
She had like a very string bikini thing on.
Oh, but no, yeah.
I'm worried. And then like she had like a scoop top and then like her boobs were hanging over the sweater.
Right. It was, made like, no very sense. Weird. Yeah. I was like, what is the point of wearing a shirt? Your boobs are just hanging out. They're literally just hanging out.
Yes. I was like, oh God. And like, you know, she knows how much she likes to show them off. So.
Yeah.
All right. So. Let's go on to another frustrating pair here, Sophie and Rob. So in the interest of spicing things up, Sophie and Rob are at a lingerie shop. So Sophie says that Rob has been better towards her recently. And so she's going to do something for him and finally do the dress up, like the one adventurous thing in bed that she was going to try, which is, we're backing up. Like, dressing up is like the thing she's like, I guess I can try that. So after some jokey playing with, like, he has a sheer robe that he, like, puts on. It's like, should I have this? Sophie picks out, and Rob together pick out some schoolgirl things for her to try out. So she's pretty embarrassed by this whole process, and Rob is trying to have fun with it in the store, before, at least at first. And so she says, well, two can play at that game, and we can both have fun, so I'm going to pick out something for you to wear. So then he's like, okay, we'll do that. And then they argue for a while about which one of them is a bigger starfish in bed, which, based on, like I said, that their idea of adventurous is like, ooh, maybe you could dress up in lingerie. I feel like that might be a legit argument for them to have. So anyway, her first suggestion, she picks off the wall. He's like, wear this. And he's like, that's a jock strap and it does not cover your ass at all. And then he turns it around to show her like how it works. So then he settles for some sort of like chest, like it's a strap, like with strappy things and makes an X on your chest. Like he's in Mad Max or something. So it doesn't really, he puts it on and it doesn't, I feel like it's too small because it's like really tight at the top and doesn't quite cover his nipples. And she says it's cute and then like grabs it and snaps it like she's a middle schooler with a bra. So anyway, now it's her turn. And although she warns him, she's not going to come back if it doesn't look cute, come back out if it doesn't look cute. So she goes in and after a minute, she's like, yeah, this skirt is way too short and my ass is just hanging out. So I won't be wearing that. But I'll wear the top, and she comes out in the top, and it's like a little, like, I don't know, almost like a tube top thing. And then she has like a tie on top of it. And Rob is kind of immediately disappointed because he's just like, that's just a top. Like, you wear that stuff like that all the time. This isn't even dressing up. And then it turns into now what started off as playful flirting is now just a fight. And so she's like, she's like, oh, well, you don't think, basically goes right into, you don't think I'm attractive and you're also being a huge dick. And why couldn't you just compliment me when I came out in the outfit? But Rob says that he's not even upset, doesn't think she didn't look cute, but he's upset that he had to come out in this stupid Mad Max thing. And she's, you know, just got to come out in the regular top and she got to look cute and he got to look stupid. So now he's upset. So she says he like always says the wrong things to her and he just says she should stop being so sensitive. So then he keeps doubling down on how he looked silly and she looked hot. And that's not fair. So then we're there in the car now and she's crying because it made her feel like she didn't look good. It made her feel insecure. And also because he still hasn't apologized for acting like a dick. And mostly because she kind of goes back to all the time, he doesn't make her feel like she's attractive. So he thinks that's dumb because he's like, I wouldn't marry somebody I didn't think was attractive. But she doesn't believe him. So on the ride home, they kind of keep circling around and coming back to things. And he just says that he thinks she's looking for reasons to be mad at him. So I guess there must be somebody else.
Oh, gosh. So
she's not happy with that. She's offended he would even suggest it. But he keeps telling us, even in interviews, it makes sense. If there's maybe she always thinks he's bad because there's somebody better that she's comparing him to. Right? And it's always this and that. And maybe it's even Kay.
Oh, gosh.
So there's got to be somebody you enjoy more. And she's like, well, yeah, right now I like being with my mom more and my friends more because when I'm with them, they're nice to me. So they don't like take all the time. Then she says something about you took all the time, which I think was a reference to the therapy session they had when like she had issues. I don't know what it was. So she says, then he like, basically she's this like, we're always talking about your issues and not mine. And then idiot, his response to that is, Sophie, you're not getting it. What I need, and it's just like, oh my God.
Oh God.
And then he feels like he's the only one that cares about the relationship. So they're at home, still fighting more when they get home. And Rob starts the conversation at home being like, well, if you don't want to work things out with me, you should just be with somebody else, because she left the car in the middle of the argument. Sophie was lost. She always thinks she really doesn't understand how he contorted himself into being the victim now at this point. So he says, he's like, well, we just got to work on things. And Sophie is pretty clear of it. The only thing we have to work on is you not being a dick. Like, just stop being a dick. He's not even sure what she means by that. Like, just kind of blah, blah, blah. And eventually she blurts out that he knows he has a second phone. And then they argue about the phone. So he says the phone wasn't a second phone. It was just his phone that he thought was in airplane mode, but it was connected to the Bluetooth somehow. And he did have a missed call on it. It's just a weird thing that happened. Of course, as we've been through before, that doesn't make sense because you wouldn't hear the outgoing message again.
Right.
Right. Nobody brought that up. So in an interview, he said he's 1,000,000% sure she's not going to find a phone because there isn't one. And he doesn't want to. And then he brings up again, like he says, he doesn't want to live his life like this with someone who clearly prefers drama like Sophie does. She's always making it drama. Like, who else would bring up my online cheating for a whole year?
Oh, God.
Like, so he just says, she just wants it. Just be nicer to me. And like, once she says, be nicer to me. So he's like, oh, so there's nothing I can do to fix it. I was like, she just told you what to tell me. and then like, she's like, all I need is for you to tell me I look pretty when I put on lingerie. That's it. But Rob clearly thinks that what she's asking for is beyond the capabilities of anyone. Like, he's just like, who could you possibly find that's going to treat you like that? And she's like, I don't know.
Literally anybody? Anyone.
Like, literally anyone. Like, maybe I'll find somebody else and they'll do it. And then he's like, was that a threat? So, and then, like, she was like, well, I just mentioned being with somebody else. Don't you care about that? Which makes them both feel some kind of way. So she is, both are convinced they're the victim here. Sophie walks out. He's just, like, sitting on the stairs playing games for saying he doesn't want to play her games anymore, and he doesn't chase her. She leaves sobbing. I guess she's going to CK. I found it very hard to make sense of everything that was going on here, because
I did too. It was like, I don't even understand the fight that started it all.
I do understand it. Yes.
But they flipped, because at first he was like, they ain't anything special. Right. And then next thing you know, he's like, what? I was saying you look so beautiful. And it is like, no, you didn't. No. But now he's saying that, you know, she looks so beautiful. So why is she still upset, saying, you never tell me I look beautiful? It's like, I'm pretty sure he just said it to you a bunch of times. Now, I get it. It was under like stupid conditions. It was trying to prove a point that why do you get to look sexy and I look like a fool? You know, and so that but it was like, I don't even understand what this fight is.
No. And a large part of this is we go on Rob all the time and we talk about what an ass he is. And that's true here. Make no mistake. But she also comes across as very 23.
Yeah.
Right. Like, she doesn't know what she's mad about. She doesn't know what she wants. Like, she says she wants something. And then when he gives it to her, she's like, but I just want that thing. And he's like, I just did that thing. Right. And like at the end, that is a weird hill to die on, when she goes, well, fine, I'll find somebody else who'll treat me like that. And he's like, okay. And she's like, I can't believe you don't care that I said I would find somebody. That is like the most 23-year-old argument I can imagine.
It is. But, you know, I think really at the end of the day is that she doesn't think he's being sincere when he actually does say the things, right? Because he didn't. Sure. He just kind of offhand like, yeah, you look beautiful. You look super hot. I look like an idiot. And it's like, yeah, technically he told her she looked hot, but like not in a very sincere way. It's like, comparatively, I look like a fool. You look great.
Right. But that's because it's him. And that's him being, you know, he can't. All he mostly cared about was he looked like a fool.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. That was the fight. I can't think about how good you looked, or compliment you on how good you look, because all of my mental energy is being upset that I look like a fool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's where it is a roundabout way of saying, but like, nobody wants to hear, like, you do want to hear that you're attractive. You do want to hear him compliment you. You want to say, you don't want to hear is like, fine, I guess you look good. Like,
but let's talk about how stupid I look.
Yes, right? I mean, yeah, you're hot, fine. But, like, you know, like, yeah. Nobody, she doesn't want that. She just wants him to be like, oh, hey. Like, and he could have done it. I mean, he just lost his, he doesn't have self-control to do it.
No,
right?
He doesn't.
Because he can still make the points he looked to, like, oh, man, you look so great. And, oh, I feel so bad. I feel kind of bad that you don't look as dumb as I look. Man, like. Right.
Yeah, but I also feel like that ship had sailed, right? And that's what I was talking about, like, not being genuine about it, because he didn't say it right away. And so at this point, she feels like she's the one who had to tell him to tell her that she looks pretty, right? And it wasn't like an immediate reaction. So it just doesn't, it's not going to seem sincere.
No, and it doesn't, I get where she's coming from too. The frustrating part is, how does that turn it into an hours long argument?
Oh God, I know.
Like,
right?
What are you doing? Like, and that's the stuff of them just like saying the same thing back and forth to each other for hours and hours and hours is just, and then both of them at the end of those hours are like, you're not listening to me.
Right.
Right. Because we have a situation, and we saw this with Ashley and Manuel, did the same thing, because they're not listening to each other.
No.
They just want to say their part and have the other person take it.
Yeah. And I think that's also, like, to your point, like, Sophie also just didn't handle it very well. That whole, like, you know, that immature thing you do. Well, I'll see if I can find this elsewhere. What do you mean you're not going to fight for me?
Yeah, right. Know? Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, it's just awful all around.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, speaking of like push and pull, same old, we got Nicole and Mahmood. So it's been a few days and Mahmood is still sleeping on the air mattress. He finally found his way to the mosque and he's meeting other people. Nicole thought things were getting better until Mahmood accused her of cheating on him. They got in a huge fight and Mahmood says that he messaged her the other day and she said she was on her way home at 8 p.m. But she didn't actually arrive home until 2 a.m. and she was very clearly drunk. Mahmood asked to see her phone and she freaked out and refused. Mahmood was convinced after this incident that something was up. Nicole says that she had a couple drinks, but she wasn't even tipsy. She admits that she refused to let him see her phone, but she says that it doesn't mean she's cheating because she doesn't even have time to cheat on him. She just thinks that he was being controlling, and so she wasn't going to give in. Mahmoud doesn't think that Nicole cares about his feelings, so he thinks she's capable of cheating, and he doesn't feel anything for her anymore. Nicole doesn't really pay attention to his empty threats of divorce, but the fact that he says that he has no feelings left for her feels so final. Nicole isn't sure if he was being truthful or if he was just emotional, but she's not about to stay in a loveless relationship. Mahmoud says he can't take it anymore. They argue about where Nicole was that night, and she says that her friend Olga, who we met, it was one of the friend groups that came and crashed the house, wanted a drink because she was fighting with her boyfriend Julian. Nicole refused to show him her phone because she thinks that he should trust her. Mahmoud says that everything she's been doing is showing that she has power, like her clothes and the drinking. He says he's done, and this time it's for real because he's not seen any change. He says that he doesn't feel any love from her, so he has no feelings for her anymore. She tells him that he can't stay at her place anymore, even if he's just trying to figure things out. Mahmoud packs up his stuff and leaves without saying goodbye. Nicole feels devastated. She says no matter what they went through, they always had feelings for one another, but if they don't have that anymore, there is no point. Mahmoud says that divorce is the only option because everything is just getting worse. He meets a friend at the mosque and hopes that his friend can help him while he figures out how to get back to Egypt. Nicole thinks that Mahmoud is the best and worst thing that has happened to her, and she thinks the only way of getting through this is remembering she'll be free again. Okay, so do you think that these people still have love for one another, or do you think they just said things that they didn't mean while emotions were high?
I mean, I would think it's easy to say that these people don't really have much love for each other because it didn't seem like they ever did. Like, I don't know at what point I saw either of them express. They said it out loud with words.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything in either of their actions the entire time we've seen them that indicates that they have a true deep love.
Right. At least in the U.S. I agree with that.
Egypt was a long time ago, so I struggle. But yes, for certainly this season,
yeah.
At no point have they even shown like they like each other, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, okay. So what I feel like I remember from their first season is that they should not have been together, but I felt like she was actually trying. And so because mm-hmm. she was trying, there were certainly moments of like sweet tenderness between them, you know, where he kind of recognized that this wasn't easy for her, but he kind of was getting his way, so he was still kind of happy.
Right.
And, you know, she was trying because it seemed like, you know, she wanted to make things work, even though it was like very difficult. So, I mean, at least there were moments of that. This, I have seen none of that. I have not seen him try to compromise in any way. I mostly agree with him that I feel that she's just trying to exert power now that they're kind of in her home turf, so to speak, and right. show him that, oh, this is going to be nothing like Egypt. We will have none of that anymore. And I do feel like a lot of these things that we've seen her do have been kind of power plays, which,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, which mm-hmm. just, you know, is not how you show someone you love them.
No, no. And I think it doesn't help that she does things like that are basically, we know it untrue.
Yeah.
Like she comes out, like you said, she doesn't even have time to cheat. And then he's like, well, she was missing in action from 8 right. to 2 a.m. And I was like, you know what? You have time to do it in those 5 hours.
Right.
Like that's time right there. So like, and so I don't believe she came back. She was like, I wasn't even tipsy. And I was like, I don't believe that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Because why are you out until 2 in the morning?
Yeah, 2 in the morning, very specific time to come home.
Yeah, like, closing time, yeah.
Yes, right? And so, yeah, and so I believe his version of the story more than I believe her version of the story. And yeah, just to kind of do things like that. Like, she almost comes across as somebody who is cheating because that's, oh my God, that's, oh, I feel like it's a super common thing that people who cheat say.
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't even have time to do that. Who even has time to figure out how to cheat? Like, I think that's That's one of the common excuses. And it, she does seem like somebody this entire time that has been, I'm going to be the biggest ass I can so that he breaks up with me.
Yeah.
And it's not my fault. Yeah. Right. She's definitely been giving off those vibes this entire season.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely seems like that. All right. Our last couple is Gino and Jasmine. So Gino is packing up and Jasmine has brought him coffee. So they're still in Miami for Jasmine's birthday. Gino tells her that he doesn't feel good and he's disappointed because he just found out that she doesn't want to have a baby. He doesn't like that she's making life decisions without discussing it with him. Gino says that it was his dream to have at least one child of his own. Jasmine wants to explain why she made that decision. She says that she is depressed, stressed, and anxious, and it's evident through her physical health. She also says that she doesn't feel right about having a child when her children aren't there. She feels guilty bringing a baby in the world when her children are elsewhere. Gino wants to know why she didn't tell him this before. Jasmine says that she wants to put things on hold, and she isn't saying no, just that she wants to wait. Gino says reluctantly that it sounds reasonable. Jasmine apologizes that she changed her mind about having a baby and didn't tell him immediately. Gino accepts her apology and hopes that as soon as her stress is better, that she'll change her mind. Jasmine says that she needs to find herself again and she wants to enter the pageant because it'll give her a boost of confidence. Gino agrees that it would be good for her and he supports her. He hopes that it will make her happy and get her out of her depression. All right, so do you think that Jasmine will be in the right mental state in Gino's timeline? Because I don't know why he thinks like, you know, oh, we have this unlimited amount of time and, you know, we'll just wait for her to be in a good mental space.
Well, it's not even his timeline. It's right. Hers too. She's not young.
Yeah.
Right. It's every year she waits to do this as a year that it gets harder to do this.
Yeah.
Right. As a year that it gets one step farther, and it's another year that Gino's old.
Yeah.
To be having a baby. Right.
Right.
And we're talking about like, if he's extrapolating forward, Gino's what, 58?
Yeah.
Right. So we're extrapolating forward. Right. If you're like, well, what am I missing now? Right. Because if I go 58 plus 8, now I'm 76 when they're graduating high school.
Oh, God. That is so right? old, yeah.
Right? And then you're like, well, like, neither of my grandparents made it to 76, right? So,
yeah.
You know? And you're looking at things like that, and you're like, well, what am I going to be missing out on? What am I going to be? And if I do have this kid, am I going to be able to be there for the kid? Not just what am I missing out on, right? Am I going to be able to provide for this kid the things? But I don't know that he thinks that way because I don't know why he wants a kid.
I don't either. I mean, he doesn't have any money. I mean, that's the whole reason mm-hmm. why they can't bring her kids over is because he doesn't want to pay the lawyer fees. Right. And right. it's like, okay, you don't have an extra $5,000. How much do you think babies are? He can't right. have health yeah. insurance. Right. Because he doesn't work right now.
No, but if he has a pension, he probably has employer health, but I don't even, that's wild. I never thought about adding a dependent to my pension health insurance.
Right.
To my post-employment health insurance.
Yeah. That's, and someone who needs to have like maternity like care, you know, and she's going to have like cost of labor, you know, it's like.
Well, I was thinking about the kid would be on his health insurance, has to be on his health insurance.
Right. Also. That too. And right. it's just like all mm-hmm. of that. It's has he considered how much this kid is going to cost if he doesn't want to go back to work?
Yeah, right. I mean, so somebody's got to work. Like, yeah. if you can't, like, the whole point of the whole, like, design behind a pension, which for most pensions is bare bones as it is,
mm-hmm.
like, it's still going to be tough to make it on just the pension, right? There's like, you should have other savings besides your pension, right? That's supposed to support, like, an empty nest.
Right.
That's supposed to support a family.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what in the world he's thinking right now.
Yeah. It just has the feeling of people who are going to put it off and put it off and put it off. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, you can't do it.
Right.
You're done.
Yeah.
Right. And that just says it's reasonable. I mean, I think he probably had time to think about it and understood he was upset that she made the decision without him.
Yeah.
But finally did realize he can't make that decision for her.
Right.
Like yeah. he really doesn't get a say. It is ultimately her decision. Whether she's, she should probably share it with him, but he can't. It's not a decision where he can be like, nope, I'm putting my foot down and we're doing this. That's not his thing to say. He can't do that.
Right. But even if he did, like, okay, I mean, not with Jasmine, because obviously that's not an option. But if he was like, no, I really want to have a kid, what is he going to do at this point? Okay, he's 58. So he's going to divorce her, find someone else, try to convince them to have his child at 58, right? Because that person's going to have to, you know, come face to face with the reality that there is a strong possibility that he can't be a active father in this child's life than, you know, the full 18 years. That's a possibility, right? I won't say strong possibility, but, you know, it's a possibility. He's going to convince someone to have his child under those conditions? Like, how long is that going to take?
Yeah, and he's going to find, woo, and marry someone who's, you know, of childbearing age.
Right.
Right? In the terms that wants to have a baby with his asshole ass, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
That, so finding someone, there's not other options out there for him. And so I think that's part of it, too, is like, I just got to play nice because
this is my last chance.
This is it.
This is really the one time that I will be like, yeah, okay. This is your last chance at having a kid.
It's not his last chance at love. It's his last chance at having a kid.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll give you that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless you want to adopt, and then that's a whole different ballgame.
I don't know, but he can. He's too old.
Well, I don't know.
Like, adoption agencies are very strict about who they will, like, allow to have babies. And he doesn't have a job, and he's 58.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's going to have a tough time getting it through that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, goodness. Okay, so we covered all of our couples that we had on this show this week. We did not see from Patrick and Thais and Ashley Manuel. Out of the group you saw this week, who was your student of the week?
I'll give it to Alexi for having to hold down the fort with all those kids running around. That was pretty tough.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it to Alexi. I was like, oh, goodness. And, like, just even, you know, his attitude about, well, I'll take care of Lauren because, you know, mom isn't going to be able to remember all these directions and there's a lot involved. And, you know, just thinking about stuff like that instead of being like, peace, I'm going to go hang out with the kids.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. What about your dunce?
I went with Nicole. It was whatever she did. She basically kicked him out.
Yeah.
Right? The lying and the staying out, because that's a bullshit thing to do anyway. And for her to literally say, I'm on my way home at 8, and then not just and just roll in it after 2 a.m., that's like messed up at the first place. And like try to be like, well, I was just going out. I'm not going to change the way I live my lifestyle. And it's like, that's not an acceptable way to treat somebody. Like, that's not your life. It's not a lifestyle thing.
Yeah. I went with Michael. I mean, he should know Angela enough. And it was a bit of a bonehead move of him to include that conversation. I don't think it was the best move. If you're trying to prove that your conversations and relationships are real, I don't know if highlighting like the worst of the worst is really like the best thing to do. But forgetting about that, he should know Angela to know that he should have run everything by her.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the mundane ones would have been good.
Right.
Just like the conversations that are like, oh, no one who's faking it would bother having a conversation this boring.
Right.
This is just like this could only be a couple that would have a conversation that no one else would ever want to read.
Right. What about your life lesson?
So my life lesson goes kind of Sophie and Rob. And I think it's maybe a little bit of the young person thing. Maybe it's an old everybody thing. You don't have to finish an argument when you start it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can table it. And I think it's more of a Rob thing. Rob's like, well, are you just going to stop having this discussion and we aren't going to work through it? It's like, you both need to calm down to be able to work through this. And like, a lot of times you're just spinning your wheels. I feel like when I was younger, we used to hear the advice, never go to bed angry.
Yeah.
Right. And for a lot, I've met too many couples and too many people who just means they never go to bed. Right. And now they're cranky and tired and still having the same argument.
Right.
Like, take a break from your arguments, and it doesn't have to get settled as in a continuum of when it got started.
Right. My life lesson is for Nicole. if you have a lack of communication or you're being secretive about something, it's no wonder your partner is going to jump to the conclusion of cheating, even if it's not true. Like, why was she being so, if she wanted to have control of the situation, she could be like, what do you want to see on my phone? I'm not going to let you have it, but I will show you whatever you want on the phone. Right. And just to prove up or at least communicate with him. Why do you I will tell you exactly what I was doing today. You know, like there are other things that she could have done to communicate openness without, you know, in her eyes, relinquishing complete control that would have made him less suspicious of her.
Right. But yeah, I get back to the first point. Yeah. You can't just drop off for 5 hours and not have him suspicious that you're doing something he wouldn't want to know about.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And most people, a lot of people are going to jump to cheating for that.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So, as far as we know, we will be back next week, usual day, Monday, because we'll actually see each other next Monday.
That's
so,
right. You will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, until then.
All right.
Okay.
Everybody then.
Bye.
Bye.